Attention, patriots. Broadcasting from the Free Zones, Radio Free Redoubt begins in 5, 4, 3, 2...
Welcome to episode 2006. This is the sixth podcast of 2020 here at the Voice of the American Redoubt, broadcasting from or streaming from the Free Zones deep in Patriot held territory. I hope you guys had a blessed week and everything's going well for you guys. We've had some unseasonably beautiful weather, sunny and warm, and today, we've got actually a little bit of wind, storm, blustery snow, sideways snow, and it was nice because just threw another couple logs on the fire and just nestled in. I love that kind of weather when I'm working on the show, because when it's nice and sunny out and I want to be out there, it's really hard. But anyway, so this just worked out. I hope you guys had a blessed day, and if you had outdoor stuff to do, the weather cooperated with you. All right, we got a lot of stuff to cover here. I got some news and commentary items, and I'm going to back up a couple steps on the coronavirus thing. I still stand by my position on it, but I wanted to just to have a different take, a different approach here, because I got thinking about a couple things, and so I'm going to address that in segment two. In segment three and four, there's something that's really I'm seeing come to light here, and I've talked about the Bolshevik Revolution in the past, how the Soviet era communism was ushered in, and I was watching just some clips of the Democrat debates, and not that I watched them because I couldn't stomach it, but I was kind of interested at some of the sound clips that were grabbed from that, and they were on various different news sites. And I listened to this the statement from Bernie Sanders with his fist pounding in the air. I believe in socialist democratic socialism. And I thought, wow. And then he actually got applause. This is stuff that it should immediately disqualify him from being president of the United States, from even being in any elected position at all. Matter of fact, he should have been immediately arrested and put on trial immediately. Because what he is proposing is something that is in violation of the Constitution and Article 4, Section 4, which guarantees a republic form of government. And what they're trying to implement would unseat that. It would dethrone the rule of law by a constitution, the United States Constitution. So, and that's my opinion. That's my take on it. So, to see the applause and to see the crowds going wild and to see him now moving into the lead in many, many states on the Democrat ticket is alarming. Now, he's going to get mopped up in the general elections in November by President Trump. President Trump is going to win re-election. He's going to annihilate whoever the Democrat contender is. And now, from there, how the Bolsheviks choose to respond is, well, we can speculate, and we can look at history and brace ourselves, because the potential there is pretty interesting. So I'm going to talk about what was the Bolshevik Revolution, what were some of the talking points, and where did that lead? What were some of the action items they took? I think that we could, like a map overlay, just overlay that on top of the socio-political landscape, the map that we have in the United States from a socio-political map standpoint, And I think that we could fairly accurately project where this goes if this trend toward communism and the demand for it continues. And I've talked about this, you know, years ago. I've gone into depth as far as communism and the roots of it, and how the revolutionary communism comes into play, and the effects and the toll that it has, and so on. But I'm going to start revisiting that. Other than just bashing on communism, you know, with one-liners, which is fun, but actually I want to go into some more historical context there. So, but first, let's get the news and the commentary knocked out of the way. The news and commentary is brought to you by 299 Days, 299 Days, the book series by author Glenn Tate, and joined by his wife, Shelby Gallagher, the author of the 3-book series, The Great State, with all 3 books out, including the audio books for those. Check them out at prepping2-0.com and I believe it 299days.com also. But go to prepping2-0.com, and that's where they also host their podcast, the Prepping 2.0. Good stuff. Now, as far as the coronavirus goes, there's a headline here. We are at a turning point. I've been following this, you know, very closely, as we said we would. And I know that many of you have also as well. The coronavirus outbreak is looking more like a pandemic. Now, 4 weeks ago, I was calling this a pandemic because, you know, it crosses borders and it affects so many people. But really, technically, it wasn't a pandemic. It was still an epidemic. But now we are about ready to cross that point where actually will technically become, if it isn't already, a pandemic. Health experts, this is coming from Vox.com. Health experts say it's time to prepare for worldwide spread on all continents during the last 2 months as a COVID-19 coronavirus outbreak has spiraled into a global threat. Countries around the world have scrambled to impose travel bans, quarantine millions, and isolate sick people in an attempt to stop the spread of the new virus. Yet, as of Sunday, today, there were 78,000 cases of COVID-19 in at least 29 countries, including surging cases, case tolls in Italy, Iran, and South Korea, as well as an ongoing outbreak on a cruise ship off Japan. The likelihood that we're hurling into a pandemic, a new disease that spreads around the world, or that we're already in one, seems higher than just a week ago. So a cruise ship did enter into, last I heard, Puget Sound. They're taking them into the Seattle area to health facilities. They had patients actually come into Spokane. That were suspected or confirmed cases of coronavirus that were going to be treated. It's quite a bit of this. So in the last few weeks, I've been saying, look, quit getting spun up over it. There's nothing you can do about it, and there's nothing I can do about it, so I'm not going to worry about it. I'm going to continue living. But I got thinking about this. There's nothing I can do about it that I haven't already done, I guess, is the correct way. And so I want to regroup in that segment too, because it occurred to me, I got thinking, well, hey, you know, we're preppers. We push for self-reliance. We've got food supply. We've got the means of defending ourselves. You have your first aid, adequate first aid for you and your family, and training and equipment and self-reliance. You have food stored up, and we have emergency communications. And then I thought, well, hold on a minute. Not everybody has that. Matter of fact, I recalled an email that I got from a gentleman who's trying to raise some young patriot sons looking for educational material about our heritage and our history living in the People's Democratic Republic of California. But admittedly, he said, I'm not a prepper. I'm a long ways off from that, sadly, and I'm not prepared. But I am trying to raise patriot children. Well, I thought, there are a lot of people out there that have taken no steps toward being prepared. So I can understand why a lot of people would be worried about it. What happens if transportation stops, if curfews are put into place, if stores are shut down, like they're talking about? I'm going to talk more about this in segment 2. What happens if you couldn't move without being arrested or thrown into quarantine because you were out after, you know, during a curfew period? These are things that, you know, I don't worry about, because if it comes down to a quarantine situation like that we're seeing across the, you know, around the world, I'm fine. Hunker down. We've got food, water, basically everything we need. As long as the lights stay on. But anyway, I'm going to just change a little bit on this. There's nothing you can do about it, so stop worrying about it. Well, for some of us, we've done nothing. And maybe I want to talk about some things that we can do about it so that you can be more self-reliant. To weather something like that, if there was a mass quarantine, mandated quarantine type situation. So there was a patriot, sadly, who was found dead. It is being ruled a suicide. And this is Phil Haney. Now, Phil Haney, I never met him. I didn't know him personally. I know Matt Shea had interviewed him just not too long ago. I'm familiar with him, and I've seen videos and I've seen his testimony. But essentially what he did was he blew the whistle on the 44th president administration, the previous president who shall not be named. He worked for the Department of Homeland Security. He was what we call a whistleblower, found dead with a shotgun, with a gunshot to the chest. It's being ruled a suicide, and it's all over. Found in his home. Oh, found outside his home. Found alongside of the road. The information is still swirling around there. In a shocking twist of events, an actual whistleblower, not a fake one like the guy Adam Schiff dug out of the CIA basement, who outed the previous administration for jihad against America, was found dead on the side of the road, according to this report. Representative Steve King, Congress. He said that, of course, he was also a friend of Phil Haney's. He said he was a friend and a patriot. He was a target because of all he knew about the Islamic terrorist cover-ups. He ensured his life by archiving data that incriminated the highest levels of the previous administration. Phil Haney didn't kill himself. Rest in peace, Phil. And that's what Steve King wrote. And now I've been involved in some discussions going on with several patriot groups and people who did know him personally. And he had expressed concern. If I'm found dead, it wasn't suicide. We've heard that before from other people that are facing death threats and people that are standing up against communist or this Islamic red-green alliance, right? The Islamic Marxist alliance. And the previous administration suppressed data that showed the extent of the Muslim Brotherhood's influence in the previous administration. But I just want to share this with you. This really is a suicide, it comes at not only an odd time, but also an odd means. Nearly all suicides by firearms are committed at home. Allegedly, Haney drove out to the area of Highway 124 and Highway 16, got out of his car, and shot himself in the chest. The gun was found next to him and his car. No note had been reportedly found, nor are there social media posts indicating any preconceived notions of depression, let alone suicide. His last Facebook post was a meme ridiculing the impeachment saga. Friends of Haney's who did not want to be identified claim Haney said he feared being suicided, quote unquote, and would never have taken his own life. Quote, if I am found dead, it wasn't suicide. He told multiple people, confirmed by two anonymous sources. And Representative Steve King also claims Haney had an archive of information he considered to be an insurance policy in case he was ever found dead of an apparent suicide. The congressman said that Congressman Steve King said that Haney did not kill himself. Boy, it sure seems to be a lot of that kind of stuff going on. Anyway, apparently, I just got a text a little bit ago from one of these patriot groups, folks that are following this very closely and close personal friends of his. Apparently, he was scheduled to be married. I just saw on one of these. So yeah, it's not like somebody's looking for a way out. It looks like they have plans for their lives, for their life. But he's exposing some really serious stuff. From Go Petition, several outlets are covering this. Eastern Washington and Eastern Oregon to join Idaho. Well, that's what some folks are hoping for. The portions of Washington State and Oregon east of the Cascade Mountains have irreconcilable differences with their western counterparts, but have much in common with Idaho. Farmers in eastern Washington and Oregon struggle over or under unreasonable laws created by urban lawmakers on the state's west sides who do not understand agriculture. Look, we saw some examples of this. That was with Mini Mike Bloomberg, the anti-gun billionaire from New York. Basically, well, he stuck his foot in his mouth. He's toast. He's done. The things that he had to say about farmers and how ignorant and stupid they are. But anyway, state-level politicians from the east side of the states return the favor by wreaking havoc on political decisions important to the west sides. Well, right now, dividing Washington State and Oregon down along the middle of the Cascade Mountain Range and moving the eastern portions of both states to Idaho would allow farmers in those areas to become more productive under more sympathetic and understanding political leadership. What they're calling the movement, some people are calling the movement Greater Idaho, the Greater Idaho. So this could be, boy, that could, okay, it's not going to happen. First of all, you have to have the approval of all of the state's legislatures. I think Idaho would probably go for it, but communists do not like giving up control. So Olympia and Salem in Washington and Oregon, respectively, they're going to say, no, that means we can't control you. That means we would not be able to have our boots on your throat. So unacceptable. But if they did vote, then it has to pass Congress as well. So this is a long shot. But why are we talking about it then? Why are we promoting something like this? Because, well, first of all, it highlights how polarized we are as a nation. It highlights how balkanized we are as a nation. And it is a temperature gauge. It is a taking of the pulse of America demographically, socially, economically, politically, to show how sharply divided we are, and that it is not temporary. It's not just a trend that's going to go away. This is something that is going to continue to manifest itself. How divided we are going to continue to be. It's going to lead to conflict at some point. But you're starting to see the fractures, visibly the fractures of the United States. You could put these fractures over look at these maps and overlay those of the map of the United States. You can see the emergence of future nation states. If you look at history as a measure. Redoubtnews.com got a good article here. President Trump forgot the most important pardon. Now, he's been pardoning a lot of people. President Trump added to his list of pardons and commutations this week, with 11 people reaping these benefits. Trump granted full pardons to 7 people and commuted or shortened the sentences of 4 others. Range of crimes in which President Trump showed mercy went from marijuana smuggling to Medicare fraud and more, including some high-profile cases. So, what Sherry Duvalli notes here, and I thought it was great that she pointed this out, in all the reprieves this week, he's granted 25 and issued 10, but we did not see the name of Todd Engel on the list of pardons. Todd Engel is serving 14 years for standing up for the U.S. Constitution. He traveled to Nevada to support the people whose rights he saw being violated. He's from North Idaho, a friend of mine, was considered one of the least culpable of the Bunkerville defendants. Along with other Tier 3 defendants, he was charged with 10 charges, including conspiracy charges. He's clearly a political prisoner. And multiple gun charges that carried mandatory minimum sentencing requirements. That's how he ended up getting 15 years. He was convicted on 2 out of the 10 charges. Now, the case against Cliven Bundy and the other defendants, these are Tier 1 defendants, considered the leaders in this standoff. All those charges were dismissed with prejudice, if you recall, on January 8th, 2018, by Judge Navarro, citing prosecutorial misconduct and several Brady violations of withholding evidence. And, of course, we saw the same thing with Todd Engel. When I spoke with him, he was talking about this, but the state-appointed attorney was just absolutely worthless. Todd just had no recourse. So I'm right here with Sherry Duvalli. It is time for President Trump to acknowledge Todd Engel and the other Bunkerville defendants that have not received fair treatment under the law. Their sentences reflect political issues rather than violent crimes. Amen. Well put. Political prisoners have a tendency to be overlooked when it comes to time to pardon people. Let's break that cycle here and now. Good job. You guys can read the whole article there and more of the details over at redoubtnews.com. And finally, I got a couple stories here from Stark Raving Mad before we take a break. Go to rhinopack.org. That's the Rhino Hunters of North Idaho Political Action Committee. Rhinopack.org. Apologize for being a white Christian. What? Well, that's what it says. North Carolina. This just happened on the 17th of February. They posted this on the 17th of February. Angry parents created uproar at a North Carolina school board meeting after Tarsha Clark, a teacher at West Rockingham Middle School, forced white Christian students to apologize for the quote-unquote privilege of being white and Christian. Unfortunately, this is not an uncommon occurrence. Despite the fact white Christians are the only group which can still be legally discriminated against, despite the facts thousands of laws at all levels of government coerce businesses, schools, and government entities to select minorities over better qualified whites, despite the trillions of dollars of wealth transferred from mostly Caucasian taxpayers to largely minority recipients, not only within the United States, but to non-white, non-Christians around the world. Despite all this, white Christian children are taught to be ashamed. There's a lot of this going on in South Africa. You know, I've been following this very closely. I haven't talked about it in a while, but I need to spend some time doing a segment on this because it is essentially reverse apartheid or reverse discrimination that's taking place. It's absolutely appalling. President Trump just pledged $100 million to assist the Chinese in their fight against the Wuhan coronavirus. Nearly 100% of the victims in China are in fact Chinese, and almost none are Christian. Should our children apologize for this as well? They ask here at rhinopack.org. Interesting question. Here's one more from RhinoPack. TDS victims attack teenagers. While this is in Indiana, while peacefully driving down the highway near Hobart, Indiana, Kieran Gregory, 23 years old, and his 18-year-old girlfriend, Caitlin Smith, spotted a pair of teenage boys riding bicycles with Trump 2020 flags attached. Like a lightning bolt out of nowhere, a blinding flash of TDS, that's Trump Derangement Syndrome, seared through their collectivist brains, causing them to immediately swerve their car into the boys, running the offending bicyclists into a ditch. And of course, then the story goes on. They actually got out and attacked the two 14-year-old boys on foot and destroyed their flags. And so anyway, this was caught. Somebody actually caught this on Snapchat. They tracked down the offenders and they were arrested. Incidents of TDS, Trump Derangement Syndrome, are spreading. Attacks have been reported throughout the world, but mostly confined to the east and west coast of the United States, much like the coronavirus being reported throughout the world, but mostly confined to the Hubei province of China. Unlike coronavirus, TDS has not killed anyone that we know of so far, but it is getting more prevalent and more virulent with each passing day. Perhaps those suffering from TDS should be quarantined, like those with coronavirus, at least until the 2020 election is over and Donald Trump has been reelected. All right, you can read that and other stories just like it. Some of them are pretty hard to stomach over at rhinopack.org. Check it out. This is the end of segment one, Radio Free Redoubt. Stick around. Segment two is coming right up.
I've been on the inside of communism. From this knowledge, I tell you as simply and seriously as I know how. Communism is a lying, dirty, shrewd, godless, murderous, determined, as J. Edgar Hoover says, a criminal conspiracy. I'm choosing these words deliberately. Lying, dirty, shrewd, godless, murderous, determined. And it is not an American political party like any other. It's an outlawed organization, taking its orders and instructions from another government to do everything possible to destroy our government. It's an international criminal conspiracy.
Welcome back. Segment two. Segment two of The Voice of the American Redoubt. Brought to you by Selkirk Mountain Real Estate. Helping God-fearing, liberty-loving patriots like you get strategically relocated to the northern part of the panhandle of Idaho. For those of you that are looking at that area, they've been helping people for years. Great folks. SelkirkMountainRealEstate.com. All right. Now, as I mentioned, I wanted to address the coronavirus, I guess, some updates there. The U.S. Biowarfare Act author is saying that the studies are confirming that the coronavirus has been weaponized. Now, this is over at Activist Post, and this is something that we've suspected for a long time. There's enough research, enough coming out from multiple unrelated sources that are corroborating one another. And I'm going to put the link to this story or this URL link in the highlights and resources posting for this week's show for you guys to go and check it out for yourself. It's at activistpost.com. But we've got this now, more studies confirming coronavirus is weaponized. In other words, it was engineered in a lab. This isn't just some bat that got sick and something morphed, and now this is just some type of a flu carried by animals. It's actually developed and designed. So more affirmation of what we've already suspected and then have confirmed through other sources. China faces a financial Armageddon is another story from Activist Post, with 85% of the businesses set to run out of cash in 3 months. 85% of the businesses in China, where you see streets with no activity going on, curfews in place, mass quarantines of millions of people, which means businesses without employees showing up, and so on. So they're going to run out of cash in 3 months, apparently. 85% of the businesses. Now, Alerts USA, we've been following them. If you guys haven't been doing so, they do a great job of keeping us up to date daily as things develop. But this alert came out. U.S. Embassy in Italy issues a health alert warning of 16 confirmed cases of the COVID-19 in the north of the country. Now, the north of the country in Italy is where that's their main financial economic sector. Schools, offices, and public spaces closed. Now, I just got another one. I just got another one right at the before the show, basically stating that Austria was shutting off all trains to and from Italy to prevent the spread of coronavirus. That's with 16 confirmed cases in northern Italy, and so now an entire country shuts off its rail system with Italy. Austria did. So what concerns me, not about getting the flu or getting this flu, this virus, It's the reaction. And this is what I've been watching for here. It's how the government's going to react. I'm not even talking about looking at communist China to see how they're going to respond and think, oh, that's what the rest of us have in store, because they're the Chinese communist government. They're going to do everything heavy-handed. They're going to lie about everything put out, as far as I'm concerned. They're communists. You can't trust them. So any types of numbers of confirmed cases or suspected or how many dead, how many confirmed infected and how many have recovered, but you really don't know. But when you start seeing the Western world respond, now this is something to pay more pay closer attention to. So we're watching this. Italian Ministry of Health announced 14 confirmed cases. Public schools and offices have been closed in the affected area, and Italian health officials have advised residents in the area to avoid public spaces. Travelers in the area should be prepared for travel restrictions and be put into effect with little or no advance notice. Pay attention to that. With little or no advance notice. And we're looking at these guys as a canary in the coal mine for what we might be able to expect here. Because in the United States, I want to stop right here. We're talking about 14 confirmed cases, no deaths. In Italy that I've seen reported so far. But as we talk about this and we see the spread of the coronavirus, I want to just stop. There's a good article here over at MarketWatch. As the world focuses on coronavirus, a deadly flu has killed at least 10,000 Americans. Are you guys aware of this? How many Americans have died from coronavirus? This is what's got everyone spun up. This is what's got Northcom ready to pounce and respond to this global pandemic. Meanwhile, did you already know 10,000 Americans have died? Let me read this article to you. Market Watch. And these are numbers that we've seen before. I've referenced these before. Not these latest numbers, but just the fact that we have way more cases of people getting the flu, the regular flu, and dying. At least 19 million people in the U.S. have experienced flu illnesses this season. This season, according to the CDC. Americans concerned over the new coronavirus have spawned a public health emergency declaration, a controversial travel ban and quarantine, and China-bound flight suspensions. But the better-known flu virus is a far greater threat to Americans' health right now, data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention suggest. There are now 37,198 confirmed cases of coronavirus worldwide, and at least 811 people have died. This is from this report, February 9th, as of this date. So there's way more. There's like 80,000. What were the latest numbers? This is old enough. This is what, 10 days old or so. So at that time there was 37,000 cases. And at that time there were 10,000, at least 10,000 Americans have died from the regular flu. So how many more since then? That's the point. I want to go down to this line here. The World Health Organization has warned that the window of opportunity to contain the international spread of the epidemic, now we're talking about coronavirus, that has killed more than 2,200 people around the world, was closing as the virus has spread to some 26 countries, with a large cluster in South Korea and current outbreaks in Iran, Lebanon, and Italy. More than 2,200 people killed worldwide from coronavirus. Over 10,000 people just in the United States have died from the regular flu this flu season. But the Military Times is pointing, look, they are preparing, NORTHCOM, the U.S. Northern Command, they're executing plans to prepare for a potential pandemic of the novel coronavirus. They're calling it COVID-19. That's coming from the Navy, Marine Corps, service-wide messages issued, the week before last. So they are preparing. I've been talking about survivalblog.com for the last several weeks. I think they're probably the premier source. I know there's a lot of great sources, but they've just been my go-to for years. James Rawls has just been so gracious and supportive of Radio Free Redoubt, and he's the founder of the whole American Redoubt concept. And they are still going strong as one of the premier survival preparedness websites. Oh, and for today, February 23rd, preparedness notes for Sunday. Today is the anniversary of the beginning of the Battle of the Alamo, February 23rd, which lasted through March 6th. I don't know if you guys knew that. I'm a big Alamo fan. February 23rd is also the birthday of Captain Isaac Davis from 1745 to 1775. He was a militia officer and a gunsmith who commanded a minute company in action, Massachusetts, during the Battle of Concord. That was also this date. That was over there at Survival Blog at the top of today's notes. But this is what really jumped out at me, because this is what I was looking for. Lady Liberty and I, we were doing a bunch of running around and shopping, and we stopped in at a 99-cent store, which I've never really gone into those places. And I don't know why, because I was just astounded. And it got me thinking, there are some great values here. This is what it got me thinking. There is no reason for somebody to not have food storage and basic fundamental things stored up as preppers, or to be self-reliant patriots, however you want to put it. When there are grocery discount outlets and there are 99-cent stores, I was very surprised. Whole bags of beans and rice and food, canned goods, soups, and things that would be twice as much at least in a regular grocery store. So I don't know if these guys are buying this stuff by the pallet, discounted rates or something, but they're able to pass that on. And there's just so much, from flashlights, headlamps, and not the best quality, but I mean the food is normal quality of any other food. And so I thought, you know, I'm going to make a note of that, because I got thinking, there are some people out there that are thinking, man, I have no preparations whatsoever. And I'm a patriot, but I'm not really prepared. Well, get prepared, because that's what I was thinking. This coronavirus thing happens. So what? You hunker down, you quarantine 30 days, 60 days. We're going to feel it. The economy is going to, there'll be a crunch. There'll be a recovery. If this went worst case scenario, I don't mean worst case scenario like zombies. I mean, just a worst case scenario for a massive, like what China is experiencing, where they're forcibly, I mean, they're arresting people that are caught out wandering around outside their homes. So businesses are shut down. The streets are shut down. Transportation, all of it comes to a screeching halt. Well, I could certainly withstand something like that for months. And many of you in the listening audience could as well. But there are a lot of people that's the whole concept's new to them. But then also, I got thinking, it's expensive, really. If you're going to go to one of these preparedness outlet type of places, canned food, dehydrated, ready meals and things like that, we're talking about some pretty big bucks. But you don't have to spend that kind of money. You can get into, it just kind of it was a jolting reminder for me when I went to the, when we went to the 99-cent store, just last week. And I thought, you know, I'm going to mention this in the show, because I do know that there are some people that are they're having very difficult times, you know, financially, and it's a big deal for them to try to store a month's worth of food on any kind of a budget. So this is how you can do it. And then I stumbled across this article. I thought, how appropriate. It's called Prepping at the Dollar Store. And it was two postings that were just sent to Survival Blog, you know, in the same month. But this one was just posted today. Earlier this week. I just saw it today. And the writer writes, reading some prepping websites and articles could make a person give up in despair, because they're talking about all of these packages that cost, you know, $1,100, $1,200 or whatever to just to have, you know, 30 days worth of food supply. So she writes, so many people are just getting by without much in the way of income beyond meeting their basic needs. Some are on fixed income, such as Social Security, disability. They look at the websites advertising freeze-dried number 10 cans of meals, all sorts of prepper gear, and they feel that it's hopeless. So what I'd like to do here is to point out all of the affordable stuff that you can buy locally that will help with your prepping that is available to anyone who can come up with an extra $10 or $20 to spend on products that they'll eventually use anyway. So this is a great point. And there's a whole list of she lists a whole bunch of stuff here. And she writes, there were some items there that I personally wouldn't trust the quality of, such as batteries, agreed, tools, duct tape, electrical tape, forget it. Don't buy it at these kind of places. Buy 3M, buy the top of the line Duracell or Energizer batteries or Enloop rechargeable batteries. Don't get these cheapos. They just don't. I know they're supposedly made in the same factories as the top name brands and they hold up just as well. It's not true. My own personal experience, they just don't. Get the name brand when it comes to batteries and when it comes to tape, duct tape, electrical tape, and generally tools as well. But there's a lot of really great stuff there. Little flashlights, LED flashlights, and pasta, rice, cold cereal, hot chocolate, instant coffee, peanut butter, canned vegetables, canned fruit, dried fruit, nuts and seeds. It's all ramen, you know, pasta sauce, canned foil packs of, you know, fish. And there's just, it was just a really cool thing. So I thought, hey, she's got it all listed right here as well. Canned meats, coffee creamer, juice, chips, canned pasta meals, and then, you know, a lot of tools, household items. You can slowly start getting this stuff put together and get a kit and get on your way. Now, as far as some of the other stuff going on with these quarantines or with this outbreak, is the question of quarantining, how to quarantine your family, how to protect yourself if it comes down to that, where they it's so widespread that you have to lock down. You've had a couple of months, you've poured a bunch of your resources into making sure that you have at least, you know, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days worth of food without having to leave your house. You may not live like you're used to, but you're not going to starve. Okay, so you've achieved that point. Then what about quarantine? Do the same thing. Go to survivalblog.com, and up in the right-hand side, there is a search box, and it is titled, or just type in self-quarantine. Type in self-quarantine, and there are a ton of articles there that talk about, you know, for any type of virus or outbreak or anything like that. So check it out. All right, guys, let's take a break. Come back with segment three. I'm going to talk about the Bolshevik Revolution and kind of what got me started on that. I had not heard of it until, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago. Well, no, it's been longer than that, actually. But anyway, prior to that, I just never heard of it, never considered it. Well, we're seeing it unfold. I'll talk about why and how and why I say that when we come back and what it could mean for us and in the future if things don't change, and even what it could mean for the unwitting useful idiots that are trying to usher it in. Well, that and more when we come back with segment three here at the Voice of the American Redoubt. I'm John Jacob Schmidt. Don't go away. Hey guys, this is John Jacob Schmidt. I want to tell you about Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher, powerful husband and wife team. He is the author of the 10-book prepper novel series, the 299 Days book series, and she is the author of the 3-book series, A Great State. Both are out in audiobook. They also co-host the very popular podcast and syndicated radio show Prepping 2.0. Glenn has a free set of flashcards for your phone called PAM Radio, which teaches you all the practical stuff you need to know about radios and none of the stuff you don't. And you can visit PAMRadio.com to reserve your free copy. Information on their books, podcasts, and PAM Radio are available at prepping2-0.com. That's prepping2-0.com. This is segment 3 of Radio Free Redoubt, and it's great to have you guys all with us. Thank you guys for your prayers, your support, your letters of encouragement. Some great questions, too, about emergency communications. I'll be covering this week in the Partisan Radio podcast. It specifically deals with preparedness and partisan radio operations and emergency communications in general. Good stuff. Now, this segment, segment 3, is brought to you by Strategic Landscape Design, God-fearing, liberty-loving patriots located in the American Redoubt. But you don't have to be living in the American Redoubt to take advantage of their services. They have designs to help, or they help you design your property to get the most out of it as far as defensibility, food production, water production, procuring water rights, placement of your structures, your easements and approach and egress and ingress, all of these things. And if you got a couple pieces of property you're trying to compare to find out which one's going to meet your needs from a prepper, patriot preparedness type of standpoint, check them out. strategiclandscapedesign.com, and their remote services, you can check them out there and ask how they can help you, even if you don't live in the American Redoubt. All right, now this week I was watching some clips from the debates, and I saw this Bernie Sanders debate, or the Bernie Sanders debate. I guess that's what it's turned into, huh? But during the Democrat, which is Marxist, whether they call themselves that or not, well, I'm not a socialist. I'm a Democrat. Well, that's what they've become. All of the stuff that even the most moderate, if that's what they want to call themselves, Democrat. They're espousing Marxist ideologies. It's just that Bernie Sanders is the only one that's at least honest enough to say, I am a socialist Democrat. But it's funny to see some of these websites trying to do damage control, because they're like, gasp, oh, we're not ready for you to come right out and say it. We're supposed to just implement Marxism. We're supposed to just implement socialist, communist policies and not call it that. We're supposed to just be Democrats. And now you're kind of throwing us all out there. We got to deal with this word because people are gasping and saying social. He came right out and said socialist. So what they're doing is they're saying, that's not what he meant. What he means is, well, he means, let's go. Actually, so I did a search, right? I did this internet search on Bernie Sanders, socialist Democrat. And it's interesting to watch these. There's Time magazine. In an attempt to widen the appeal of his brand of democratic socialism, Bernie Sanders tied himself to the legacy of Franklin D. Roosevelt. But I do believe that the middle class and the working. Okay, so it's Franklin D. Roosevelt, an American. Not Marx, not Lenin, not Stalin. We got to tie him. He's trying to tie himself to a leftist, Democrat, American. Here's another one. What socialism is, according to Bernie Sanders at Big Think. Bernie Sanders is America's best known democratic socialist. But what does he mean by that? So they're trying to explain to soften it up. Fox News is going after it. Why democratic socialism can't work, from the Washington Times. Democratic socialism preached by Senator Bernie Sanders and others seems like a pretty good dream. The problem is that it's just that, a dream. Thank you, Washington Times, for allowing somebody to actually print that. over at Newsweek. Bernie Sanders is a democratic socialist, not a communist. Here's the difference. And they try to explain the difference between a communist and a social democratic socialist. He says, I believe in a vigorous democracy in the CNN town hall. So he's not, it's not communism. It's a vigorous democracy. So that's why I'm a democratic socialist. But as Lady Liberty very astutely pointed out, this goes, and I didn't know, I learned this from her. I didn't know this. And she has it in her book on the perils of sustainable development. With, I mean, there's the quote, there is the source documents, everything else. This is part of Perestroika, which you guys know is the new messaging campaign from the Communist Party, the Soviets, right? And they said, well, we need to stop calling ourselves socialists, or we need to stop calling ourselves communists. It's not very palatable. We need to start calling ourselves democratic socialists. And that was, those were the marching orders. It was a new branding, a new packaging. It was lipstick on a pig. And this is the new lipstick we're going to put on this pig. Stop calling yourselves communists, because it's really creating some backlash for the Americans over there in the United States that are trying to implement these Stalinist Marxist policies. So we need to start calling it something different. We'll start calling it democratic socialists. And now they're like boldly, I am a democratic socialist. So now you got all these people running around trying to, like I said, do damage control over at Vox. As he runs for the 2020 nomination, Senator Bernie Sanders, a self-proclaimed democratic socialist, is going to have to define what that means in terms that don't scare Americans. Oh, no, 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 no. You should scare the Americans. The Americans should be scared when they see that. The problem is most of them aren't. They just yawn, democratic socialists, whatever. The problem is only half of them are saying, yeah, whatever. The other half are cheering. When you see him speak, the only one that's the outspoken communist, self-identifying as a democratic socialist, a.k.a. communist, even though they're trying, he's not a communist. You're a liar. Communists lie. That's what they do. You cannot trust a communist. When a socialist Democrat says, I'm not a communist, they're lying. That's what communists do. You can't believe anything they say. This is going to be a better, new, improved communism. Oh, I mean, socialism. All the other people didn't do it right. That's why the way we're going to do it, we're going to do it the right way. It's like the previous administration, the 44th president, who will not be named, saying that the reason why socialism didn't work before, the money, the bailouts didn't work before, is because they didn't spend enough money. They didn't go into debt enough to get out of the Great Depression fast enough. And he's taken the lead. Bernie Sanders is taking the lead in the Democrat Party in the race for president. He is coming out ahead of all the others. This is America. This is President Trump and vigorous patriotism versus communism. Those are the two sides. Everyone else is in the middle trying to figure out where they belong. You're going to have to pick a side. Now, here's the numbers just this evening. This just came in from The Guardian, which is a left-wing rag. And they openly admit they're proud of advancing leftist ideals, which many of you in the listening audience are very well aware whose side they're on. MSN, Microsoft Network, New York Times, and there are they all with the headlines. How Bernie Sanders dominated in Nevada. Bernie Sanders opens sizable lead over Democratic field in new Wisconsin poll. Bernie Sanders sets sights on Super Tuesday after crushing Nevada win. And the Bernieites, burned brain cells, are cheering like a bunch of zombies with their fists in the air, screaming for a revolution. Now, it's interesting. The talking points, their arguments, the promises of prosperity, the promises of equality, the working class, redistributing wealth, all of this stuff is capturing the youth. this so-called worker, we're for the little guy, we're going to, and creating division based on class warfare, really, to pit the average citizen against the rich, which is fine. I mean, multi-billionaires like Mini Mike. I'm agree with that. Those guys got too much money, too much power. But, well, who's going to define rich? The Bolsheviks are going to define what rich is. And that little sliding scale is going to keep sliding, and it's going to slide further down and faster. The whole design with communism is to destroy the middle class. There will always be an upper class. The elite, like Bernie Sanders, who's already a multimillionaire, they'll have their positions of power and they'll live like kings. There will be no middle class, and unless you are like middle management in the government, and the majority of the people will be working for the government, just like the Bolsheviks. Everybody's working for the government. All the arguments and talking points completely remind me of my research, my studying and reading about the Bolshevik Revolution that ushered in the Soviet Union. Now, I had not heard of it. It was actually 20 years ago. Late 90s, I read, or in the mid-90s, I read Atlas Shrugged. And then a couple of years later, I picked up another of Ayn Rand's, or Ayn Rand. I don't know. You can debate that. I don't care. I call her Ayn Rand, A-Y-N. She's a Russian immigrant. She saw Soviet communism rise to prominence in her homeland of Russia. So the Russian Orthodox Church, the Russian government, they were in cahoots with each other, really turned her off to religion altogether. She was self-proclaimed atheist because she saw how evil and oppressive it was when the church and the government became intertwined and all-powerful. It's kind of like the Church of England did, which caused that was one of the sticking points with during the Revolutionary War in America. But anyway, she came to America and she wrote Atlas Shrugged. This was her flagship work. It was amazing. If you're judging that, if you've not read that book and you're judging that story based on the movie, forget it. They ruined it with the movie. But she wrote another one called We the Living. And it was a fictional book, but these are real events. This is describing the real life of the people that were going through the Bolshevik Revolution. And it was an eye-opener for me. Amazing story. Amazing. It's right there with Orson Welles type of eye-opening experience for me about how the left thinks and what they think of justice and social justice, comrade, to the peer pressure to bring people online. It was really an eye opener. And that's when I first really started learning about the Bolshevik Revolution and how the talking points, and she does a great job of, you know, building this into the narrative of these fictional characters and what they went through. And how the state and all of the lemmings, like we see people that feel the burn, you know, all their bumper stickers and waving their banners, calling for socialism. They don't even know what they're screaming and crying for, but it doesn't matter. It's like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. They're ready to start screeching and pointing out non-conformists, and there's violence coming in the future in America, because violence has always followed communist revolutions. And that's what we're seeing right here. It is that they will get control of the minds, and enough of the masses are convinced we must have this beautiful, you know, peace, prosperity, and equality by force. It's the opposite of everything they're promising is going to be. There's a good article here over at The Federalist, and I strongly recommend you guys just go to The Federalist and type in Bolshevik Revolution. And I'm going to talk about this next week as well. We're going to talk about what Bolshevism is and communism and the Bolshevik Revolution. And the parallels between what they're promising, these communists are promising, is going to bring prosperity to this, you know, make America into a utopia. It's the opposite. The opposite is true. It is destructive. It is an existential threat to the United States. And so in this article here, this woman writes, her name is Katya Sedgwick, writing, "I lived in Soviet Russia when Bernie Sanders visited, and he's a communist dupe." She said, "Democratic presidential frontrunner Bernie Sanders likes to market himself as a wise old man who just happens to have clown hair, but is right about everything, such as the war in Iraq. Yet his opposition to the Iraq war was dictated not by cool-headed geopolitical calculations, but the lifelong habit of romancing American enemies, as is typical for communism lovers." And isn't that the truth? I mean, Sean Penn is down there with Chavez in Venezuela. And how many of these movie star pro-commies are down there visiting other communist leaders or Castro? And they're duped. They come back here. And that's exactly what communists, I've seen so many stories from communists saying, "These people are idiots. I left communism. I don't want it here. I left it for a reason. And you Americans are stupid if you allow this to gain any traction whatsoever. You have to go against it with everything and anything and everything that you can, with every ounce of energy within you. Because after the United States, there is no place else to go." So I'm going to read on what she, just a couple sentences, what she wrote. "The recently surfaced press coverage Sanders gave following his return from his honeymoon in, you know, he went to the Soviet Union for his honeymoon, literally, is a great example of leftist naivete about totalitarian regimes. For Bernie to fawn over Soviet culture the way he did indicates a staggering degree of in curiosity. I was only 15 and growing up in Kharkiv, now Ukraine, when the couple visited the USSR, and I'm not impressed when I watch Sanders sing Moscow's praises. That's what people think of Bernie Sanders' communism, who lived under communism, and they can't write about it fast enough, they can't yell loud enough to warn America. But are they listening? Over at thevictimsofcommunism.org, they have, well, quite a bit to say about the Bolshevik Revolution, which took place in 1917. Promulgated by the Soviet history books and not a few Western fellow travelers, hint, like Bernie, argues that it represented an inevitable epical movement of the masses led by the Bolshevik Party with the full backing of the people. The truth was otherwise. The revolution, and this is what we're going to see in America if this is allowed to continue, the revolution in America was in actuality the culmination of a Bolshevik power play which had begun to take form a month and a half earlier. It was neither spontaneous nor universally backed. It was less a revolution than it was a coup." Sound familiar? What are the Marxists trying to do with our own government? The only president that has fought for the issues that President Trump's fighting for. And what we've seen is a continuous barrage, a steady staccato of attacks and fiery darts that they fired at this president to try to unseat him. And even breaking the law repeatedly, and nobody is held accountable. Except they line up for the next trial, the next fake, whatever it is they're going to try to bring against Trump. It's a coup, as already has been previously identified. And that's not conspiracy theory. "There was an urgency to the Bolshevik effort to overthrow the provisional government, Russia's fragile democratic regime. The provisional government had scheduled elections to the new National Constituent Assembly for late November. Knowing that his Bolsheviks might well lose the elections, Lenin had made it clear that they would need to seize Petrograd, Russia's most important city, before that date. To this end, the Bolsheviks set about preparing their conspiracy. Its tool would be the Military Revolutionary Committee. I believe in America there is something that will be formed, it's already formed, that will resemble the Military Revolutionary Committee in America. I also believe that Antifa and other groups similar to this will be used in that capacity. I also believe they will try to use portions of our military to hijack that. There are enough of the 44th president, previous president who will not be named, who have been added to the ranks of our military that there will be compliant members in the military that would be willing to be part of this. Now we have the Socialist Rifle Association, we have Antifa, the John Brown Gun Club, and all these communist Marxist and otherwise socialist organizations that are really oriented toward armed revolution. And using armed communist revolution handbooks that they're distributing among their people. And we're sitting there worried about other things, distractions, and not seeing this existential threat rise up around us, among us. And now we have Islam being added to that. And people trying to point that out are ending up dead now. Very interesting times. Very interesting times for sure in our country. We got choices to make. We want this to remain the United States or not. There's not going to be any in between. And it's not too far off. Hopefully we have at least 4 years. But we'll continue to watch. We'll be back with segment four to close things out here in just a minute. Stay right there.
There is an exodus happening in America today, from cities full of crime and corruption to the rural areas of clean and sustainable living. Like-minded patriots are coming to North Idaho in search of a simpler, self-reliant lifestyle. I'm Chris Walsh, broker and owner of Revolutionary Realty, based in the heart of America's great redoubt, North Idaho. Sometimes God puts you somewhere for a special reason. For me, I believe it's to help like-minded patriots find safety and security for their loved ones. At Revolutionary Realty, we educate buyers about solar power, growing food, obtaining water, and personal security. I became a realtor in 2008 at the bottom of the real estate market, but not the top. I believe that there is a grand plan, and that I'm just a part of it. My job is to help people discover and relocate to America's great redoubt. Call a revolutionary today at 208-667-1776 or visit us at revrealty.us to learn more. That's www.revrealty.us, and God bless you.
Last segment here, segment four, brought to you by Works Holsters, WERKZ.com, Works.com, custom-made Kydex holsters and magazine carriers, and really expanding their workshop is just really amazing, the stuff that they're doing now for holsters designed for pistols with accessories, all the various different configurations of flashlights, lasers, any types of just about any kind of accessory you can put on a handgun, they can design. They've got all of these. It's just a really cool thing. As the molds that they have for all the various different handgun models and all the different accessories and just about every type of configuration you can imagine. That's just very impressive. Anyway, check them out. Works.com. Great folks. Lifetime guarantee on all their products. Now, I was mentioning thefederalist.com, which is a great website covering a lot of history, heritage, not just American heritage, but other things like, well, this is a great place where I've found some really great research and some articles written by some researchers and people who were there. They've been in communism and they're writing about it as basically warning us as watchmen on the wall to not allow Marxism to take a hold here. Well, it has taken a hold, and sadly, we've allowed it to get into our education system with a government indoctrination system. They're not dumb. It really is. It's brilliant. It's cunning. Well, it's satanic. So it's not something to be underestimated. But I believe, as a culture, we've underestimated it. We've allowed them to gain ground. But if you go to the Federalist, do a research on the Bolshevik Revolution. That's, I'll spell it for you. It's B-O-L-S-H-E-V-I-K. Bolshevik, V-I-K. They have broken down into six phases of how they destroy freedom, how they implement their policies. And so I want to just share a couple of things with you in the last couple of minutes. The Bolshevik Revolution reveals six phases from freedom to communist misery. Scarcity, terror, and the mass murder of more than 100 million victims are communism's main contributions to human history. As we mark the centennial of the Bolshevik Revolution, this was back in 2017, this was written. We should never forget that legacy. Communism is a fount of human misery and death. Few today really understand what that system of so-called government is all about. In a nutshell, communism enforces a privileged elite's centralization of power. This means it always puts too much power into the hands of too few people. They tend to weasel their way into power as their ventriloquized agitators use talking points like justice and equality while promoting a false illusion of public support. So how would it ever be possible for a free society like America to succumb to such tyrannical forces? And the writer here says, I think we've spent precious little time trying to dissect and understand this process. So in this three-part series, I hope to map out six stages that lead us into this dangerous direction. With each phase, several trends take hold. I'll discuss the trends in more detail in parts 2 and 3, which I want to share with you guys as well in part. So there's a lot of overlap among the phases. They can be roughly identified as 1, laying the groundwork. 2, which is what they've been doing. 2, propaganda, also what they've been doing. 3, agitation. And that's right where they are fully into right now. Agitation. Pitting race, black against white. Pitting rich against poor. Men against women. Women's rights. The youth versus the older generation. Every different type of Christians against non-Christians, God against those who want freedom from religion. And then this is the phase that we have been creeping into, especially it's been accelerated since President Trump was in office. But even before that, a state takeover of society's institutions, which has also been happening, well, actually for decades. Coercing conformity. Are we not seeing that? You must conform. I mean, to the most insane things. You must pretend that a girl is a boy or a boy is a girl. If that's what they want you to do, you must comply. And they're going to coerce you to do it. They're going to destroy your business. They're going to make it a crime. That's coercion. And 6, final solutions. So we're going to take a look more closely what communism really means for human beings. How could it spread in America? This article asks. To achieve absolute power, Lenin focused on fomenting a class war, while Hitler set his sights on a race war. Either way, the divide and conquer modus operandi of fascists and communist demagogues is pretty much the same, no matter what each side may claim about the other. Their propaganda content may differ, but not so much their divide and conquer methods. Attitudes of supremacy come in a virtual rainbow of flavors and colors. And this is the part where it brings it home to America. As Saul Alinsky taught, and the agitprop of groups like the Southern Poverty Law Center illustrates so perfectly, the goal of all such radicals is to seize power by fueling resentment and hatred among people through various forms of consciousness, particularly class and race consciousness. That's what identity politics is all about. That division is a key tool for totalitarians in their conquest of the people. Once their organizations breed through ill will, the masses, made up mostly of alienated individuals, can be baited and mobilized to do the bidding of power elites with a rhetorical veneer claiming justice and equality. Most of today's enlisted rioters, groups that call themselves things like Indivisible, Anti-Fascist, Stop Patriarchy, Black Lives Matter, Refuse Fascism, or MoveOn.org, are pretty much unabashedly communist or just plain fascist in their goals and their aims and tactics. The chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party of the USA, for example, founded Refuse Fascism. It's a pro-violence group that planned street theater on November 4th with the stated goal of overturning the 2016 election and taking out the Trump administration. Well, they pull in the youth, the ignorant, and little do they know, the ones that are promoting it are going to end up dead, victims of the monster they're helping to create and are begging for. And this we've also seen. There was a meme that I saw that somebody sent me. It was a picture of a kid, looks like a, you know, middle class, all-American kid, but he's got dreadlocks, and he's wearing a Che Guevara t-shirt. Now, this was a meme, and somebody is brilliantly put. And the meme on this picture said, most people wearing the Che Guevara shirt would have been killed by Che Guevara. These are mass murderers that are being idolized by our youth that are, they've made it cool to stand for something in their minds is revolutionary, but is actually destructive to their own end. It is destructive to the freedom that they have, that they are abusing, that when they achieve their end, they will not have that freedom any longer. It's very short-sighted. And what they don't realize is what's going to happen for most of them, based on history, are things that lead to things like the Red Terror or the Night of the Brown Shirts, where they're going to take people on that are on their side. They're not sure if they're just like really fully on board. We're just going to take care of them, or we're going to take them out. We're going to take out the people that helped us achieve our goals, but now we no longer need them. They're just kind of dead weight, and then you end up dead or imprisoned right along with everyone else. We also saw this in the ghettos where Jews were rounded up with the aid of other Jews who were wearing, they were working as constables, aiding the Nazis in rounding up fellow Jews for various different motives. And but ultimately it was out of self-preservation. They thought that, well, if I volunteer and help them, I won't be put on one of those cattle trucks. But they were. They were just one of the last ones to be put on the cattle trucks. But you're going on the cattle truck at some point anyway. These people are evil. At alphahistory.com, they talk about this, and there's all kinds of stuff that we can look this up. Well, look up Red Terror. It was a Bolshevik-ordered campaign of intimidation, arrests, violence, and executions that began in mid-1918. It's a little over 100 years ago. It marked an attempt by the new regime to eliminate opposition, political dissent, and threats to its own power, including among their own ranks. This wave of state-sanctioned political violence was mostly carried out by the Cheka and its fanatical leader, Felix Dzerzhinsky. Now, Cheka is the, it was the All-Russian Extraordinary Commission. They call themselves the Extraordinary Commission. We're extraordinary. Cheka. It was abbreviated as VCHK, commonly known as Cheka. It was the first of a succession of Soviet secret police organizations. Of course, Cheka was followed by the NKVD, and then the, or the NVD, and then the NKVD, and then the KGB. So Cheka agents targeted any individual or group considered a threat to Bolshevik rule or policies. Among the victims of this Red Terror were Tsarists, liberals, non-Bolshevik socialists, members of the clergy, kulaks or affluent peasants, foreigners, and political dissidents of all stripes. Under the auspices of Red Terror, the size of the Cheka and the extent of their activities increased exponentially. The more power they get, the more they use. The true impact of the Red Terror is difficult to quantify. Listen to this. According to official Bolshevik figures, the Cheka carried out almost 8,500 summary executions in the first year of the Terror, and 10 times that number were arrested, interrogated, detained, tried, or sent to prisons and labor camps. The true number of extra-legal killings were undoubtedly much higher, possibly approaching six figures. And that's what you're going to get when communism comes, if it's allowed. Anyway, we're going to talk more about this in upcoming shows, so you guys stick around or stay tuned. In the coming weeks in the podcast, we'll be talking about this. Stay tuned for Liberty State Radio. Lady Liberty's got another message for you right after this. So you guys have a blessed rest of the week. This is John Jacob Schmidt, and you've been listening to the voice of the American Redoubt, broadcasting from the Free Zones. Good night.